Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now the Russ Belville Show. Streaming at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620 KPOJ.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Oh, yeah, welcome to the weekend. It's the 4th of July weekend, I guess, kind of, because Wednesday's the 4th of July, and you've reached the Russ Belville Show. I'm Radical Russ Belville, your red state refugee, coming at you from the free speech zone that we call America, with political talk for the regular guy. That's right, I'm just one of you, just the average used car driving, going to work everyday guy coming here on the weekend, and we're going to talk about everything that's happening in the world today. We, of course, start ourselves off with our...
The Week in a Minute.
The Supreme Court rules that if you're trying to make your schools racially balanced, you can't consider the race of the students. The ghost of Richard Nixon advises the Bush administration to ignore congressional subpoenas for oversight.
I'm not a crook.
Bush's immigration bill dies in the Senate thanks to the relentless attacks of right-wing talk radio.
The majority of humans don't like whites.
Ann Coulter publicly wishes for the assassination of a presidential candidate, and the Secret Service doesn't pick her up for terrorist threats and ship her to Guantanamo.
So I've learned my lesson. If I'm going to say anything about John Edwards in the future, I'll just wish he had been killed in a terrorist assassination plot.
British authorities foil a terror plot to explode two car bombs in London. If you're hitting the road this holiday weekend, make sure you're not behind the Romney family station wagon. And just in time for America's 219th birthday, the American bald eagle is taken off the endangered species list.
Let the eagle soar.
Ah, yes. Former Attorney General John Ashcroft on the mic. Yes, yes, let that eagle soar. We're glad to hear that the eagle is off the endangered species list. That's a beautiful thing. We all support the animals out here at the Russ Belville Show, of course. You may have heard me talk a few times about my own animals, you know. I've got a few. But before we get to all those stories, we have to start, of course, with the most important story in the news for the past, well, what, 4.5 years now. The war in Iraq. Since we spoke together last weekend, 26 more U.S. servicemen have died in George W. Bush's occupation of Iraq, bringing the total to 3,578 dead, 25,830 wounded, and $200 million per minute and counting. The Russ Belville Show honors the service and the dedication of our soldiers, and we condemn our leadership who have lied them into an unwinnable war. We honor the memories and grieve for the families of Sergeant William Wayne Crow, Staff Sergeant Daniel A. Newsom, Corporal Derek C. Dixon, Sergeant First Class Nathan L. Winder, Sergeant Trista L. Moretti, Private First Class Andre Craig Jr., Private First Class Henry G. Byrd III, Specialist Eric C. Palmer, Specialist Joseph P. Kenny, Sergeant Joel A. Dahl, Airman First Class Jason D. Nathan, Sergeant William E. Brown, Lieutenant Daniel P. Riordan, Sergeant Joel A. House, Sergeant Jimmy M. Malone, Specialist Derek A. Calhoun, Staff Sergeant Michael D. Moody Jr., Sergeant Chris Davis, Private Shane M. Stinson, Sergeant Michael J. Montpettit, Specialist Carter A. Gamble Jr., Specialist Dominic N. Rodriguez, Private First Class Jeremiah J. Veitch, Specialist Karen N. Clifton, Private First Class Raymond N. Spencer Jr., Sergeant Alfonso J. Montenegro II, Private First Class Daniel J. Agami, Sergeant Ryan M. Wood, Private First Class Anthony D. Hebert, Private First Class Thomas R. Leemheis, Major Sid W. Brookshire, Specialist Joe G. Charforis Jr., Private First Class David J. Bentz III, Staff Sergeant Darren P. Hubble, and seven more whose names have not been released yet, pending notification of their next of kin. And nobody else out there is reading you these names, are they? You go and turn on your political talk radio. You can listen to the right wing. You can listen to the left wing. Nobody else out there is giving you the names of the people who are sacrificing out there, because that's part of the trick here. This is the lesson that the right wing learned from Vietnam. No, they didn't learn that you can't quell an insurgency in its own country. No, they didn't learn that imperial adventures in Southern Asia are a big mistake. No, they didn't learn those lessons, no. The lessons they learned was A, don't have a draft, and B, keep the news of Iraq off the front pages. Whatever they can do, if they can trot out Ann Coulter to make an inflammatory statement to distract you, great, that's what they'll do. If they can put Paris Hilton on Larry King for an hour so that we're not talking about Iraq, that's what they'll do. Nobody else wants to read these names, but I want you to remember, these are 25 shattered families out there this week. 26 now, excuse me, 26 shattered families that are missing their father, their brother, or in the case of Trista Moretti and Karen Clifton, their mother, their daughter, their sister. Kids out there that are growing up without their dad or potentially their mom. And as long as they keep this war a distraction, as long as this is just a series of numbers that show up every day, then Americans can be distracted. Americans can look away and turn to, I don't know, the iPhone or whatever that comes up next. So that's my contribution here, is I'm going to keep reminding us all of the real people who are affected by this war. You know, if we had more shared sacrifice in this country, if we had some, I don't know, rationing or a draft or any of the things that happened in any of our previous wars, say maybe not having tax cuts, if we were called on to sacrifice, I'm telling you, we'd have been out of Iraq long ago. And it's up to us to convince our fellow Americans to make this the number one priority. And I know a lot of you, it's already the number one priority. I know that, and we're working hard, and I know a lot of us are frustrated, and we feel like, you know, this war has gone on longer than World War II. We've had more deaths in this war than we suffered on 9/11. But we've got to keep fighting. We got to keep fighting for our men and women, our brave men and women out there who have been lied to by their commander-in-chief, who've been dishonored by their secretaries of defense. And I'm telling you what, you're not going to hear Rush Limbaugh tell you about the statistics coming from Iraq. You ever hear that on the Sean Hannity show? You ever hear him talk about how many people have died in Iraq recently? Have you ever heard Lars Larson get on the air and give you the names of the people who have died in Iraq? No, I don't think you're going to hear that. So that's why you got to turn to me, the Russ Belville Show. We're the ones that are going to keep our pulse on this Iraq war and not let them shovel it underneath all these other supposed news stories. But it is the 4th of July weekend, and so we want to, of course, we honor the sacrifice of our fighting men and women, but of course, with the 4th of July weekend, it's the vacation period. It's time for everybody to get out on the road and enjoy that long 3-day weekend that we're all going to have. And so one of the things that we want to talk about with regards to that is, the adventure of Mitt Romney. I don't know if you caught this story. This was in Time magazine. They just had this expose in the Boston Globe where they were investigating Mitt Romney, you know, and they were just wanting to look back on his record and look back and tell some anecdotes, you know, some stories about Mitt Romney, because they're trying to position him here as a serious candidate. They're trying to show that he's a leader in a crisis, you know, that he can make the tough decisions when necessary. So we hearken back to 1983, okay? So we're going to go back 24 years. They told this little anecdote about Romney, and they were trying to show, again, how he's a quick thinker and how he can take a stressful situation and turn it into something good. He can make a tough decision and be a strong leader. Now, another thing that happened back in 1983, you probably remember, is the movie National Lampoon's Vacation. You remember Chevy Chase, National Lampoon's Vacation, he's going down to Wally World. You remember that movie, right? So this is the same year, the same exact year that Mitt Romney goes on his vacation. the movie Animal House, or not Animal House, excuse me, the movie National Lampoon's Vacation is out, and you probably remember this scene. You know, they're going down in the family cruiser, the big station wagon that they had, the big super deluxe station wagon, and they took their dog Rusty. You know, they took the dog Rusty. This is in the movie, right? They took the dog Rusty, and of course Chevy Chase goes out onto the highway, and he has to, you know, use the restroom or whatever with the dog, take the dog out to do his business. And of course, well, Chevy comes back, Chevy Chase's character comes back, and to keep the dog from running off, he ties the dog to the bumper. Well, let's just, Ricky Champagne, our engineer back there at the board. Ricky, why don't you pump that clip up from National Lampoon's Vacation?
You know what the penalty for animal cruelty is in this state?
No, sir, I don't.
It's probably pretty stiff.
Oh, you can't think I'd do this on purpose, sir. Look, I tied him to the rear bumper when I was packing the car. It was very confusing. I must have forgot. I
had a pooch like this when I was a kid. Poor little guy. Probably kept up with you for a mile or so. Tough little mutt. Yeah.
It's a hilarious clip. I mean, you've seen the movie, right? So, of course, Chevy tied the dog to the bumper and then forgot the dog was tied to the bumper and then took off in the station wagon. And this is the part where the cop has pulled him over. After seeing him drag this, you know, half-destroyed dog carcass in a leash from the back of his bumper. Okay. I mean, it's funny because it's a movie and it's not real, of course. You know, we don't support animal cruelty in any way. So how does this relate back to Mitt Romney and Mitt Romney's family vacation? Well, if you haven't heard this story, you got to stay tuned for after the break here, because I'm going to tell you all about Mitt Romney's own little Chevy Chase moment that's really bringing him a lot of heat from the animal rights activists. So I'm Russ Belville. It's 17 after the hour. Stick around for that. We got some more audio and, of course, all the other stories of the day. Plus, you can call in if you'd like to let your opinion be known. Give us a call here at the Russ Belville Show. The number is 866-55-77-377. Be right back at you.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star.
22 after the hour. Welcome back to the weekend. I'm Radical Russ. Hey, we're talking a little bit here about summer vacation season here. 4th of July weekend. A lot of you are probably out on the road already with the packed freeways out there trying to make your way to your favorite vacation destination. And I hope you have a good drive. I want to remind you, you can call us here at 866-5577-377 or send us an email at RadicalRuss@gmail.com. I had a caller holding on the line, wanted to talk to me about Iraq, apparently didn't like my position on it, but then he hung up because, you know, it's kind of tough to have a debate with an ex, you know, a veteran like myself who's against the war when I've got facts and reason and logic on my side. So, yeah, I understand how the conservatives are a little scared to call the Russ Belville Show. So, hey, you know, I'll take conservative calls. I'll take people that disagree with me. We're not screening out the people that disagree. In fact, that's one of the things that I stand for here is more free speech. I think we need to have more of this dialogue. So, you know, you want to come up, call up and have a respectful dialogue? That's great. I won't talk over you. You know, I'll let you make your point. I don't believe in this, in that shouting over each other that you see so much on the TV talking head shows. So, sure, conservatives, you want to call in, you know, go right ahead. We can have a reasonable discussion, I think. But with the lack of that caller, I will just go back to the story that I kind of set up at the beginning of the show. We were talking about back to 1983. And back in 1983, of course, was the movie Vacation with Chevy Chase about how they traveled cross-country in the station wagon. And, you know, Chevy ties the dog to the bumper and forgets him and drags the dog down the freeway. And so this brings me to Mitt Romney. Of course, Mitt Romney, the former governor of Massachusetts, Republican, who is running for the GOP nomination. And, you know, Mitt is... Mitt's trying to paint himself as being this great leader, you know, someone who can make a tough decision in a stressful time. Okay, so there was this series in the Boston Globe that came out, a seven-part series that detailed Mitt Romney's history and was telling a few anecdotes about the Romney family to paint him as, you know, this decider, as this person who can make a tough decision. So this goes back to 1983 when Mitt Romney's family was on a road trip from Boston to Ontario, Canada. Okay, so this is about a 12-hour drive in the middle of the summer to go from Boston to Ontario. Okay, so when they're making this trip, they're traveling in the family station wagon, and he's got, you know, Mitt Romney and his wife and his kids. And I think he's got four kids, right? So five kids. So not a lot of room in the old family station wagon for all the five kids, the mom and dad, and then they've got this Irish setter. They got this huge dog. I don't know if you've seen an Irish setter. It's a pretty huge dog. And so this Irish setter's named Seamus, and good name for an Irish setter. And so, yeah, that's right. Good name for an Irish setter, right? So anyway, they're trying to travel this road trip to Ontario. Settle down, Roscoe. That's my dog, Roscatelli, Smelly Philly, semicolon, pucker butt, you know, Roscoe P. Coltrane. Sit, Roscoe. So they have this Irish setter, and they don't have enough room for the dog in the car. So what's the brilliant decision from this man who wants to become president? Well, his brilliant decision was to strap a dog kennel on the roof, okay? Strap the dog kennel up on the roof of the family station wagon, put the setter up in this cage, this wire cage up on the roof, and drive down the freeways of America, you know, got to be 55, 60, 65 miles an hour, for 12 hours. He's driving this dog, you know, on the top of his roof. I mean, this is insane. This has got to be the worst case of trying to make someone look good in a story. I mean, how many out there, I mean, would you strap your dog to the roof of the car for 12 hours? I got some people who are veterinarians in my family. One of my sisters-in-law is a vet's assistant. And, you know, I was just asking her, you know, just in general, because I was asking her about my dog and some other things about dogs in general, because I'm kind of new to being a dog owner. And I asked about, you know, when they look out the window like that, they always want to look out the car window or get in the back of the pickup and look out. And is that bad for them? And she's like, oh, yeah, that's awful for dogs, because, you know, dries out their eyes. It can lead to all sorts of infection. And she says, if you want to look at the type of things hitting an animal's eyes, you know, look at the front of your car. You know, look at all the bugs and the dings and the nicks and the scratches on the front of your car. And you're gonna subject your dog to that sitting on the roof of the car for a 12-hour drive? Now Romney has been, you know, hammered on this, because this was in Time magazine, right? He's been hammered on this. And so he said, well, I built it with a windshield. You know, the little carrier had a windshield. Well, hey, you know, Mitt, if the windshield's good enough for the dog, why isn't it good enough for one of your kids? Why don't you put one of your kids up there? And here's the kicker. Here's where he demonstrates his great, you know, decision-making and stress-handling abilities. As they're going on this drive, the dog, of course, is freaked out. You know, you'd be freaked out for 12 hours on the top of a car at 60 miles an hour. And the dog lets loose with a diarrhea attack. Well, you know. And this, you know, dogs will do that. If they're really stressed out over a situation, this can happen, right? So the diarrhea is running down the back of the car and back of the car window, right? And the sons are complaining how bad it is, you know, that the dog is just, you know, stinking up the car. So Romney's solution is to pull the car over, get out a hose, spray down the car and the dog, you know, at some gas station somewhere, and then just keep going. And just keep going down the road with the dog strapped up there. And so, you know, PETA went nuts on this, of course. I got this PETA statement. We'll come back after the break and give you some of that. And Mitt Romney's reaction and how he tries to justify this has just got to be heard to be believed. So stick around for that. I'm Russ Belville. This is The Russ Belville Show. We'll be right back after the news.
State refugee, Radical Russ. This is the Russ Belville Show.
33 after. So so Mitt Romney, this Republican candidate for the GOP nomination, you know, this God-fearing man who thinks that he wants to run our country.
I believe in God. Believe in the Bible. Believe Jesus Christ is my Savior.
Yeah, yeah. This guy, Mitt Romney, he wants to run our country. And you know, being president requires that you make some pretty tough decisions. And all the way back in 1983, when he took his family on a vacation, he straps his dog to a dog in a dog carrier to the roof of his car and drives 12 hours on the freeway with his dog on the roof. This is a guy that wants to be my president. You can't even make the simple enough decision to either put the dog in a kennel, you know, leave the dog in a kennel back at home, or get some, you know, keep the dog in the car, or do anything other than strap the dog to the roof. You know, that sounds a lot to me like a man who's a little bit more interested in his own convenience than he cares about the cruelty to that animal. And, you know, the righties here. I've been reading the right-wing blogs on this, and they're saying, what's the big deal? What's the big deal? It was 24 years ago. You got to dig back 24 years to find some dirt on Mitt Romney. So what? It's just an animal. I mean, it's just an animal. Oh, man. And right there. That kind of attitude tells you everything you need to know about the so-called compassionate conservatives. I mean, right off the bat, it says something about conservative that they feel the need to put the word compassionate in front of it, right? I mean, that's telling right there, okay? But, you know, this is not no big deal situation. This is not some little issue. This is important. I mean, look back to George W. Bush. We've seen all what we've gotten from Mr. Compassionate, Conservative, God-fearing George W. Bush. This is a guy who, when he was a kid, when he was younger, used to torture frogs. He used to catch frogs and put little firecrackers in their butt and blow them up. Okay? There's something to be said about a man who mistreats animals. Someone who is going to be mean to dogs or cats or any sort of helpless, defenseless creature. How are they going to be to a helpless, defensive human being? Well, you know, we know what Mitt Romney would be like.
Some people have said we had a closed Guantanamo. My view is we had a double Guantanamo.
Yeah, double Guantanamo. Okay? Not enough torture. We just don't have quite enough torture here. These are the kind of people that have hijacked our country, that have hijacked our ideals, and have stolen from America not just money and not just lives, but our integrity, our standing in the world. There was a survey that just came out just recently of our allies, the people who are, you know, our allies, Canada, you know, Britain, France, you know, and so on. And then they listed all these countries and they asked, well, who do you think is a bigger danger? Or who do you trust more on the world stage? They trust Vladimir Putin of Russia more than they trust George W. Bush. So there's something to be said about this animal cruelty. And Ingrid Newkirk, the president of PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, had a statement on this. And she says, quote, if you wouldn't strap your child to the roof of your car, then you have no business doing that to the family dog. I don't know who would find that acceptable. Now, I don't exactly agree 100% with PETA in a lot of situations. Well, number one, I'm a carnivore, loves the meat, you know, gotta eat the meat, gotta have that. And so, you know, me and PETA probably don't agree on that. And you know, and I think it's okay for people to have pets. And, you know, I think it's a little hypocritical that the vice president of PETA uses insulin, you know, cow-derived insulin, and yet says that animals shouldn't be used for medical treatments. But that aside, the PETA argument here is a valid argument. If you wouldn't put your kid on the roof of the car, how can you justify putting your dog on the roof of the family car for a 12-hour cross-country freeway drive? Well, Mitt Romney found a way. Yeah, check this out. Mitt Romney, when asked about this, because this really blew up. I mean, this Boston Globe story came out, but it didn't get a ton of notice until Time Magazine profiled that, and they headlined it with a, you know, Mitt Romney's animal cruelty or something to that effect. And then all the blogs have been jumping on it. And so here's, when Romney was confronted with it, here's Romney's excuse. He got, oh man, hold on, let me collect myself on this one. Quote, this is Mitt Romney, quote, he scrambled up there every time we went on trips, got in all by himself and enjoyed it. Yeah, yeah, you know, my dog will, like, eat chocolate bars if I let him. You know, he enjoys the heck out of chocolate bars. Not that that's good for him. And my dog, he just loves to go out and run out in traffic. He loves doing that. You know, it's not very good for him, but he loves to do it. Look, Mitt, just because your dog likes to do it doesn't necessarily mean that it's good for your dog. That's right, Roscoe. It's not good for the dog to put him on the roof. And then, of course, the other tactic that the Republicans always take is to smear the messenger, right? Smear the person who's calling him out. So he's trying to smear PETA now, and he comes out with this quote. PETA has not been my fan over the years. PETA was after me for having a rodeo at the Olympics. PETA was unhappy when I went quail hunting in Georgia, and they're not happy that my dog likes fresh air. Your dog likes fresh air, Mitt. He just doesn't like it at 60 miles an hour in his face with bugs and rocks and crap hitting him in the face. You know, if your dog liked the fresh air so much, maybe he wouldn't have unleashed a stream of diarrhea all down the back of the car. This is the kind of decision-making you're going to get from the Republican Party. When the decision is between a little bit of cruelty versus a little bit of inconvenience, they'll opt for the cruelty every time. All right, well, let's get past the Mitt Romney story, because I keep talking about that. I just think about my dog, and I can't imagine a person doing that. It just blows my mind. So let's move on to some other stories here that are hard to fathom, hard to imagine. The Supreme Court just recently adjourned for the session, and the Supreme Court just came out with a pretty stunning decision in a case involving a Seattle school district. Now, here's the setup on this. In the Seattle school districts, they're trying to achieve some racial integration in the schools. Because you know what happens is, you know, first of all, back in the 50s and before, you know, previous to 1954, our schools were segregated in America. And so you could force a school to be a white school or a black school, you know, and you could specifically keep black people out of your school. And so the schools were forcibly segregated under the concept of separate but equal. The idea that it's okay to separate the races so long as each school was equal. Well, what they ruled back in 1954, the Supreme Court ruled in Brown versus Board of Education that separate but equal never is. If the schools are separated, they by definition cannot be equal. Due to lots of factors, due to racism, due to economics, due to stereotyping. But the schools will not be equal if they are forcibly segregated. Well, now we fast forward to the modern day, and while we have integrated schools and we can't keep a student out of these schools, the problem we have now is gentrification, the neighborhoods. The way that the neighborhoods are all, you know, aligned, you end up with a rich white suburban neighborhood that has great schools, and then you end up with a poor black inner city neighborhood that has bad schools. So a lot of school districts, Seattle being one of them, and also in Louisville, Kentucky, and there's many others throughout the country, have been making efforts to try to integrate their schools, to try to provide a more equal learning opportunity some kid who doesn't have the, you know, misfortune of being born on the wrong block can still get himself a decent education or herself a decent education. So the school districts have been trying to integrate the schools, and the plan in Seattle was to set it up so that there would be a racial balance at the schools, so that if a school had too many black children in the school by ratio, that they would bus kids in, white kids from the other neighborhoods in, to that school. And vice versa, if a white school, you know, was lacking in minorities, they would bring kids over from, you know, minority neighborhoods into those schools. Now, it gets kind of complex because the whole situation had to deal with, you know, school choice, and that kids couldn't get their first choice if those racial categories were already filled, so they'd have to take their second or their third or their fourth choice. And a parent in Seattle got really fed up with this because her daughter, and this is a white family, her daughter lived really close to a really good school, and her daughter played cello and was in the orchestra. And she couldn't get into that school because the school was overbalanced with whites. And so she couldn't get into her second choice or her third choice either, and was forced to take her fourth choice, which was a school in a black neighborhood, a black school, a more minority-oriented school or populated school. And this school didn't have a school orchestra, so her daughter wasn't going to be able to play the cello. And so rather than address the problem with how come the black school doesn't have an orchestra, right? Rather than worry about all the other kids, the black and minority kids, who weren't going to get to be in orchestra, This mother was more worried about her own little white daughter, who wouldn't be able to be in orchestra, her little inconvenience, and took it all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court just recently decided this case, and it's just a shocking decision. Of course, the 5-4 majority that decided it wasn't very shocking. But we'll get into the details of that right after the break. The Supreme Court basically ruled that you couldn't consider race when trying to integrate the schools. And we'll get a little bit more into the details of that. And you can give your call and your opinion on this at 866-5577-377. And, you know, I think we should be using race to try to address the imbalances in our schools and to make things a little more fair here. We'll get into this after the break, and we'll get your opinions on the air as well. It's 44 after the hour.
KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
First time caller? That's okay. He's a first time host, the winner of the search for the next great progressive talk radio star. This is the Russ Belville Show.
That's right, and the number here is 866-5577-377 if you want to give us a call. We're talking about the Supreme Court here, and they just ruled in this case in the Seattle School District that school districts cannot use race as a determining factor to solve the problems of racial imbalance in the schools. Yeah. Okay, so you're trying to solve the problem of there not being enough minorities in a school, but you're not allowed to track whether or not there's enough minorities in the school. Okay, that's your tortured court logic for the day. This, of course, was a 5-4 decision. The five being, of course, Chief Justice John Roberts, Justice Scalia, Justice Alito, Justice Thomas, and Justice Kennedy. And as the Supreme Court just finished up their session, this 5-4 majority ruled in a lot of cases that certainly show how Bush has affected the course of our country's judiciary. We are going to be feeling the effects of Alito especially and John Roberts for many, many years to come. You know, Roberts is only like 54 years old. Alito, I think, is 57, 58. So they're young men by court standards. We could be dealing with these guys for another 20 to 30 years of these kind of tortured logic decisions. Here, check out this tortured logic. Here's the money quote they've been giving from Justice Roberts in this case. And he says, quote, "The way to end discrimination on the basis of race is to stop discriminating on the basis of race." Okay, well, along that same lines, the way to end attacking people in Iraq is to stop attacking people in Iraq. Let's see. The way to end rape is to stop raping people. The way to end murder is to stop killing people. Does it make any sense to anyone out there? I mean, the way to end racial discrimination is to stop discriminating on the basis of race. Well, thank you for that fabulous opinion there, Judge Roberts. Now, I'm going to go to the phone lines here. I got Mike in Vancouver, Washington, who's calling up on the Romney dog story. And Mike, you're on the air with the Russ Belville Show.
Hey, thank you very much for taking my call, Russ.
Hey, no problem.
Yeah,
happy 4th of July, too.
I gotta take you to task on a couple of things about that. One, I do have to generally agree with the righties that, yeah, this was 24 years ago you're talking about it. I think that's digging kind of deep. I think there were certain standards of behavior back then, unfortunately, that were more acceptable that I don't think you would ever see something like that today.
Okay.
But what I find particularly offensive is you would use this anecdote, and from that you would conclude that make this sweeping generalized statement that Republicans, therefore, will always choose or generally choose cruelty over inconvenience. As somebody who's married to a Republican, and believe me, I am not a Republican myself, yet I must say I find that highly offensive, and I think it is just the kind of discourse that we do not need in this country.
Okay. Well, let me address that first of all. How many years ago would it have had to have been for me to make a big deal of it? Eight? Would 8 years ago, would that be okay? Could I call him out on that for 8 years ago?
I don't know. 8 years ago? Yeah, probably.
Okay. Maybe 12 years ago? So there's like a statute of limitations on when I can call a guy an idiot for being cruel to his dog? Is that the way it works?
No, we can call him. We can say he was an idiot 24 years ago, but to say that 24 years later that makes him unfit for president, we know that Mitt is unfit to be president for many more reasons, for things that he's done much more recently.
Okay, well, I'm with you on that. I'm definitely with you on that.
But
here's where I go on this, though, and again, we can disagree on this, but my feeling is this: when you're talking about a fundamental type of a human emotion like compassion or cruelty or any of those kind of things, I don't see that people make a huge change in that amount of time. And that's why I wanted to compare that statement about Mitt Romney's dog with his statements about doubling Guantanamo. See, I'm trying to draw a path here that the guy hasn't changed. He still thinks that torture and cruelty is something that's a valid, option here. Now, I'm not going to say that he was purposefully trying to torture his dog. That's not my point. And I do appreciate what you're saying about, times have changed. I know myself, when I was a kid, in those family road trips, that we had the big old, a station wagon type car, and I used to ride in the back window. We didn't have car seats or kid seats or anything like that. I get what you're saying, though. Still, a guy who's going to do that to a dog, that doesn't sound to me like a very good decision maker to have for president. Now, unfortunately, I got to hit a break here, so I appreciate your call. I'm Russ Belville. It's 53 after the hour.
KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
56 after the hour. Got a couple minutes here before we hit the hard break at the top of the hour, but I can't let this Mitt Romney dog thing go. Mike called up and had an interesting point about how, things were different back then. We let dogs run around in the back of the pickup or whatever the case may be. Things were different back then, and so we shouldn't hold Romney's feet to the fire on putting his dog on the roof for a 12-hour road trip in 1983. Well, first of all, it was against the law, okay? Massachusetts animal cruelty laws state specifically, quote, it is prohibited from carrying an animal in or upon a vehicle or otherwise in an unnecessarily cruel or inhuman manner that might endanger the animal. So it was already against the law. So first of all, you got the guy not obeying the law. And second of all, when it comes to issues like this, don't we want someone who's a leader? Someone who doesn't go along with the crowd, someone who has a little bit of a higher moral standing to understand what's right and what's wrong. I mean, we go back 20, 30, 40 years and it was more acceptable to use racist slurs, let's say. Does that mean someone who just went along with the crowd, we should forgive them for saying those things back then? If we go back and look at the laws, before Mothers Against Drunk Driving, there wasn't a whole lot of strong drunk driving laws. So, back in the 60s, people used to drive drunk. It was no big deal. So do we forgive someone who back then, didn't have the foresight to realize that was a bad idea? That's my point. If this guy can't see that putting a dog on the roof for a trip is a bad idea and cruel, then, how can we trust him to make real decisions that involve human beings? And as far as the Republican Party opting for cruelty over inconvenience, we need only look at this recent 6 years of the Republican Party. We need only look at George Bush and Guantanamo and Alberto Gonzalez and all these liars and swindlers who have hijacked our Constitution and our country. If they show me different, I'm willing to eat my words, but I got to go with the evidence. Russ Belville will be right back.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now the Russ Belville Show. Streaming at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620 KPOJ. This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Welcome back to The Weekend. I'm Radical Russ, your paycheck-to-paycheck working-class survivor of George Bush's America. We want to talk to you here at 866-557-7377. And, of course, it is the holiday weekend. Yeah, that's right. It's the holiday weekend. We've got Mitt Romney traveling cross-country way back in 1983, puts his dog on the roof for a 12-hour road trip. Yeah, this is the smart kind of decision-making we expect from a man who believes so strongly in God.
I believe in God. I believe in the Bible. I believe Jesus Christ is my Savior.
Actually, what he really believes is in torture.
Some people have said we had a closed Guantanamo. My view is we had a double Guantanamo.
You know, things don't change. The man was cruel to a dog back then. He wants to be cruel to human beings now. I've got Sharon in Tualatin, Oregon, who's got something to say about this as well. Sharon, welcome to the Russ Belleville Show.
Hi, Russ. I'm glad to be back.
Glad to have you.
Oh, I love having you on. I wish you were on every morning.
Well, you can send an email to the station near you, and maybe we can make that happen.
All right. Well, listen, I wasn't going to call in about the dog thing because it's just obviously so ridiculous, but people are not calling in with what I'd like to hear. And what it is, you know, you're talking 24 years ago. If he had been 15, then I'd say, oh, the kid was, you know, made a huge error. But he was a full-grown man with a family
yeah.
when he did this. And talk about rationalization.
No kidding.
I am so sick of the far right and their rationalizing irrational behavior of Bush, and now they want to run somebody that they're going to rationalize again.
Oh, yeah. You know, the rationalization of Saddam having WMD or Iraq being a part of 9/11. You know, we could go down the line, certainly. And the other point that I had about this, too, and I'm glad you called because that gave me a chance to get to this other point. Well, first of all, the guy's got a kid named Tag. I mean, right off the bat, that's kind of a little weird, but I can forgive that. I mean, you know, I can forgive that. But here's the thing. You know, when the people were calling in and Mike of Vancouver called in and said, well, you know, it was 24 years ago and things were different back then. You know, we used to put our dogs in the trucks and, you know, whatever, not pay attention. Okay, there you could maybe, you know, scrape out a shred of dignity from that. But to not apologize for it now when things are different.
Yeah.
You know, he comes out and he says they're not happy my dog likes fresh air, or he got in all by himself and enjoyed it. Well, it shows to me that he hasn't, you know, he'd do the same thing today if he had the chance.
Right. He believes in what he did. He hasn't grown. He hasn't changed. And if he had come on and apologized and said, I did a stupid thing. But no, it's the same stuff we get from the far right for the last 6 years, rationalize it away.
And never admit to a mistake. You nailed it right there. You know, that's, you know, you definitely nailed that one, you know, the nail on the head award for you today. Because, you know, we're going to get more of the same. You know, we've had this with George Bush, is never admitting a mistake, you know. And here's a blatantly obvious mistake that anyone could point to, anyone half a brain and half a heart could point to and say, you know, that was obviously a dumb move to strap your dog to the roof. And he can't apologize for that. How's he going to apologize for any, you know, serious gaffe that might happen?
Oh, gosh. It's scary.
It is scary. Well, thank you, Sharon, for calling. I appreciate your call. I got to get on to the other subjects for today because there's plenty in the news to talk about. I started off on this Supreme Court ruling. And, you know, taking a look at this Supreme Court, the rulings that they've had recently, the scariest thing here is this 5-4 majority that has been formed with Bush's nominees to the Supreme Court, Roberts and Alito. And, you know, we can blame Bush for that, but another part of the blame, and, you know, I don't want to keep railing on Democrats because, of course, I support the Democratic Party, but, you know, I always keep wishing they would do more. Right now, all this legislation is getting bottled up in the Senate because the Republicans are filibustering everything. They won't let minimum wage get through. They won't let immigration bill get through. They won't let anything get through. They keep filibustering. And all I hear from the Democrats is, well, we don't have a veto-proof majority, and, oh, we don't have the votes to invoke cloture, you know. And so the Republicans, when they're in the minority, boy, they don't have any problems gumming up the works and standing for what they believe in, which, you know, I completely disagree with what they believe in, but at least they stand up for it. So when a scumbag like Alito comes along, somebody who's, you know, it was just plain as the nose on my face that this guy was going to be a toady for George W. Bush and the religious right, when they had the chance to filibuster his nomination, the chance to block Alito from getting to the court, the Democrats punted on it. They just couldn't muster up the will to filibuster this awful nomination to the court. Even to the point where, you know, when Roberts went through, Justice Roberts was even worse because he was more of a stealth kind of a guy. You know, Alito, it was pretty obvious this guy was kind of a righty nutbag. But this John Roberts, he's so handsome and he speaks so well. And during his confirmation hearings, he kept saying, oh, I will respect prior precedent and I will respect the principle of stare decisis, which is the Latin that means that you respect the decision stands is what it really stands for. And it just means that the Supreme Court is supposed to be above political leanings. Now, of course, presidents are going to pick justices that are a little more toward their side of the aisle, more conservative or more liberal. This doesn't always work out. George H.W. Bush anointed Souter to the court, and he didn't quite turn out the way he expected. But still, the Supreme Court is supposed to be above this partisan bickering. And these 5-4 decisions, with always the majority being Scalia, Alito, Thomas, Roberts, Kennedy, it's clear that we have got ourselves a political Supreme Court. Furthermore, those 5 justices I just named, all Catholic, all members of Opus Dei. Okay, now Opus Dei is kind of your right-wingish, more fundamentalist-type Catholicism. Now, again, I don't have a problem with people's religion, but where I have a problem is when people's religion starts to infect my politics. This is my country, too. This is the country of lots of people who don't ascribe to any particular religion. So to have this conservative Christian Catholic voting bloc that is consistently ruling against the Constitution and against people's rights and taking our rights away, this is something to be feared. This is something to worry about. And this is why this 2008 presidential election is so important coming up. We have got to have a Democrat in office in 2008. Now, last week, you'll remember that I kind of railed against Hillary Clinton and how I've got my problems with Hillary Clinton. I take it all back. I'll take Hillary Clinton even. We cannot have a Republican in 2008. I'll take Hillary Clinton. I'll support her 100% if I have to, if it means not having another Republican nominee on the Supreme Court. You know, Justice Stevens, who is now 84 years old, he's one of the liberal members of the court. Justice Ginsburg is getting up there in years, too. There's a strong likelihood that one or both of those people may retire within the next 3 or 4 years. And we just can't have another Republican nominee, another super conservative to join that block and take away all our rights. Here's some of the court cases that they decided. They decided a case called Gonzalez v. Carhart, and this is the one that said certain bans on certain types of abortion procedures are constitutionally okay. Chip, chip, chip. They're just chipping away at Roe v. Wade. This has been on their dartboard for years. They've been wanting to tear that one down. And all through his confirmation hearings, Roberts was saying, no, I respect Roe v. Wade. I respect, you know, the decisions that have been handed down in the past. Yeah, sure, they respect them, but then they work to tear them down inch by inch, little by little. And here's the sad part about this. Just 7 years ago, previous courts said the exact same abortion procedure was okay. Okay, so just 7 years ago, there was already decisions, stare decisis, the decision stands. There was already decisions that said those types of procedures were okay. We have so this is the conservative side of the court, folks. This, women, ladies, let me speak to you. This is the conservative side of the court saying that they know what's better for your womb and your life than your doctor. These are the kind of decisions we're going to get. Another decision, 5-4, FEC, the Federal Election Commission versus Wisconsin Right to Life. 5-4, the court ruled that when corporations exercise their freedom of speech, that is, money, when they exercise their freedom of speech in campaigns, efforts to censor them are unconstitutional. Even though 4 years ago, in an identical case heard by the Supreme Court, they said it wasn't unconstitutional. Just 4 years ago, this was the stare decisis, the decision stands. Not anymore. Not anymore. They overturned that by this decision that says that trying to limit corporations' free speech, a.k.a. money, is unconstitutional. So, when corporations speak and governments censor, the tie goes to the corporation. Ah, but in this other case, Morse v. Frederick, a.k.a. the Bong Hits for Jesus case, in a 5-4 decision, the Roberts Court ruled that when students exercise their freedom of speech, a.k.a. actual speech, in public, answers efforts to censor them, you know, actually silence their speech, by school administrators are constitutional, even though 30 years ago the court said they weren't constitutional. Again, stare decisis, we'll just throw that out, we'll throw that out and change the rules. So here's the way it works out for that. When students speak and principals ban or censor, the tie goes to the authorities, right? So corporations, you get all the free speech rights you want when you want to try to buy an election. But a student who wants to hold up a sign, we can censor him, right? Because the people don't matter. The corporations do. 17 after the hour. I'm Radical Russ.
Is the Russ Belville Show. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Welcome back to the weekend. We're coming at you from the reborn Rip City, home of the NBA's number one draft pick, Greg Oden. Oh, yeah, the 7-footer came to town just the other day, came down to our downtown square. Man, great to have some excitement coming back to basketball town here. Also, we are talking about the Supreme Court, and just want to remind you also, before I forget, that we only have got 569 days, 11 hours, 32 minutes, 54 seconds till the end of the criminal Cheney Burton maladministration. Unless, of course, we do something about it before then. Do I hear impeachment, anyone? I've been seeing those impeachment signs around town a lot lately, seeing them strapped up to fences and overpasses. I want to see more of that. Come on, everyone. Let's get those impeachment signs out. It's just about time we start thinking about it. And speaking of impeachment, you know, it's not just for the executive branch anymore. Yes, impeachment's also something you can do to Supreme Court justices. We were talking about these Supreme Court cases and how this 5-4 majority is solidly, you know, in Bush's back pocket. And I've got Christine in Portland, Oregon on the line hanging out here. Christine, welcome to the Russ Belville Show.
Hi, Russ. You're doing a great job. Thought you might like to hear my idea on how to get rid of Scalia.
Whatever it takes. Go for it.
He definitely committed treason by conspiring with Dick Cheney to keep the secrets of the first energy meetings, which we all know resulted in an oil war.
That's a good point. We go back to, Scalia was Cheney's hunting buddy.
That's right.
And boy, there's not a title you want to have.
And Kucinich is
Cheney's
in town
hunting
today.
Buddy, man.
Yeah, Kucinich is in town today, and he's the Cheney impeachment guy, so I'm going down to hold up a sign saying impeach Scalia with Cheney, and that'll get the information on the table and also scare the rest of the justices perhaps into minding their butts. On the other hand, Kennedy is voting with them. He didn't used to do that.
Well, you know, we did get a morsel of goodness from Kennedy in this segregation decision, this school district decision. The four, Scalia, Alito, Thomas, and Roberts, they all subscribe to this idea of a colorblind constitution, right?
Right.
I don't know if you watch the Stephen Colbert show where he always makes the joke of, I don't see race, I don't see color. You hear that a lot from the conservatives. Let's not see race, let's not see color. Yeah, because if you don't see it, you don't have to concern yourself with it.
It makes life a lot simpler if you're a racist.
And I don't see color.
Well, Kennedy just recently became a Catholic and just recently became all these suddenly things.
Yeah, interesting how his votes have changed, isn't it?
Exactly. I think the warrantless wiretapping, which began long before any of this Iraq business, was really about nailing down who was for Bush and who was against him.
Oh, yeah. Let's find the loyal Bushies.
Right. I think they've got something on Kennedy. I don't know what it is, but I know that the Gannon Guckert fake male prostitute that visited the White House all the time. He also had a website. And you never know what's really connected, but the fact of the matter is Kennedy does have a conscience, but they've got something on him. He would not be voting with them on these issues.
Interesting point. You know, that might be, you know, we don't know what goes on behind the scenes. So that could
Scalia
be.
Scalia can be, you know, accused of treason very easily with Cheney regarding these issues and his control of Catholics on the court.
Yeah.
So I think we should go for it, you know.
Okay.
Balls out, as we used to say. So
yeah. Well, thank you very much, Christine. And say hi to Representative Kucinich for me. I definitely appreciate that man's stance. And you know, I know that the chances for a Kucinich administration are kind of low, but I would love to see Kucinich in an administration.
Exactly.
As maybe, you know, Department of Health and Human Services or something where his stance can help the American people. So thank you. I
got
to get on to some more topics. So thanks for your call. I appreciate that. And as far as this Supreme Court goes, you know, we're talking about some pretty radical solutions here when we start talking about impeachment. And it's time. It's time for some pretty radical solutions, people. You know, we've had ourselves a pretty radical government for these past 6 years. You know, the one-party rule for the first 6 years up until this last 2006 election has exacted incredible damage on this country. And the other Supreme Court justices are certainly addressing that, too. You know, it was Breyer, I think, who came out. Was it Breyer? Who was saying that never have so many undone so much in so little time when it comes to the law. Now, I have my own solution to this one. This is something, you know, going back to the history books here. First of all, it is, you know, 4th of July weekend coming up. So let's talk a little Constitution here. Article 3 of the Constitution defines the judiciary, and it only defines the Supreme Court. No other court is defined in the Constitution but the Supreme Court. The Congress defines the rest. And it says, the judges, both of the supreme and inferior courts, shall hold their offices during good behavior. During good behavior. So that seems to be the yardstick by which you might get rid of a judge, is if they are exhibiting bad behavior. And remember, a lot of these judges were on the court when they decided in Bush v. Gore to install Bush as the resident of the White House. So, you know, is there some sort of coup going on here? Is there some sort of, you know, behind the scenes Machiavellian strategy involved here? I certainly think there is. And I'd just like to know one question here. Is lying to the Senate during your confirmation hearings, is that good behavior? Because, you know, Roberts and Alito, they just said, oh, yeah, we'll respect prior precedent. We'll respect stare decisis. We won't be partisan in our views. And they've clearly been partisan in their views, and they've clearly disregarded previous decisions. So I think that's not good behavior. Maybe they should be impeached. Here's another thought. The Supreme Court doesn't have to be 9 people. The Supreme Court originally started as 6 people, and over time it's been 6, 7, 9, 10, 9, 8, and then in 1869 it got settled on 9. So here's my idea. When we get our Democratic president in 2008, let's pass a law to raise the number of Supreme Court justices to 13. You know, there are 13 federal district courts out there, so it kind of makes sense. We could have one judge for each federal district court. 13 Supreme Court justices. Let's get 4 more of our guys and balance things out. I'm Radical Russ. We'll be back after the news.
First-time caller?
That's okay. He's a first-time host. The winner of the search for the next great progressive talk radio star. This is the Russ Belville Show.
33 after, we're coming at you from the free speech zone called America, and you can join in the free speech at 866-5577-377. And yeah, we're talking about the Supreme Court, and you know, it's time to do something drastic. And I'm calling for the packing of the Supreme Court. You know, the Constitution doesn't state how many judges there are, how many justices there are supposed to be on the Supreme Court. And over time, this has changed. We originally started with 6 justices on the court, and then there was 5, and then there was 7. It's been 8, 9, 10. There's been many different numbers of justices on the court. But this has been set in stone pretty much since 1869. 1869, so over 100 years ago, 140 years ago or so, is the last time we had a change in the makeup of the Supreme Court, and I think it's long overdue. You know, we suffer in America from what I believe is a tilted playing field that is tilted far, far to the right. The right wing gets far, far more power and support in this governmental system we have than they deserve. You know, our Constitution is all about compromises, and one of the compromises they made in the Constitution was that we'd have a bicameral legislature, a Senate and a House, and the Senate, there would be two votes for every state. And that's fair because, you know, why should Wyoming not get an equal voice to California as far as trying to, you know, make our laws? But then, of course, the more populous state of California would say that's not fair because we have millions and millions and millions of people and we only get two votes in the Senate. Wyoming has hundreds of thousands of people and they get two votes in the Senate. So the compromise then was to make a House of Representatives that would be based on the populations of the state. So that's why California has a delegation of 53 and Wyoming has a delegation of one. So this is the compromise that we made legislatively. Now, in the executive branch, the compromise that was made was the Electoral College. And the way the Electoral College works is that you add up how many senators and how many representatives are in each state, and that's how many votes that state gets for president. You know, we don't directly elect our president, right? You know, we don't get a vote ourselves. The people don't get to decide. It's these electors. And so this sets up the tilted playing field for the right wing. The sparse, less populated, more conservative states where there's more cows than people get a higher percentage of a choice for president than we do in the cities and in the more liberal, more populated states. Because if you look at the way the Electoral College breaks down, Wyoming gets three electoral votes and California gets more than 50. And so when you do the division by person, to counteract one Republican vote for president in Wyoming, you need to generate about 77 Democratic votes in California to equal the same say in picking our president. So right there, it's patently unfair that we get more conservative nominees and more conservative presidents than we really deserve. That's why you see the Democrats tacking so far to the center and so far to the right, is because they have to try to pick up the South and they have to try to pick up these Midwestern states, and they have to be more conservative than the country really is. All the studies that come out, and there was just recently one that came out about younger people, all the studies that come out show that America is a progressive nation. The whole idea of the Constitution is progressive. The idea that mankind, with no direction from God or a king or a priest or a businessman, that man himself, the people, are in charge of their own country and have their own right to govern. And yet we have this short-circuited by the system, the Electoral College that we have in place, that forces us to pick more conservative presidents. And then, of course, that infects the Supreme Court. When we have more conservative presidents, we have more conservative justices who make these lousy 5-4 decisions. Or we can look at the 5-4 decision in Bush v. Gore, when they appointed George W. Bush to be the resident of the White House. Al Gore won the popular vote. If we didn't have an electoral college that unfairly tilted the playing field toward the conservatives, Al Gore would have been president. We'd have had two decent nominees, and we could keep going and taking care of America's business rather than refighting the battles that were fought in the 50s over school segregation. So my theory, my solution to this, because I don't want to just get all ranting and raving and not have a solution, pack the courts. Back in the era of the New Deal, back in the time of FDR in the 30s, in the 20th century, this was a threat. FDR was trying to pass all this New Deal legislation that would guarantee minimum wage and guarantee the rights of workers. And all the conservatives on the court, there was four of them back then, they were called the Four Horsemen, and they were stonewalling, and they were fighting against all of these plans by FDR. And so FDR had threatened that he was going to get this law passed that would allow him to appoint six more justices to fight against that majority. And it was that threat that caused one of the justices to kind of flip-flop and turn more toward the New Deal side. And that's why we did end up getting Social Security and weekends and labor pay and all that. I think it's time to revisit that notion. I really truly believe that when we get a Democratic, and when I say when, not if, when we get a Democratic president in 2008, and when we get a larger control over the House and the Senate, I seriously, seriously hope someone considers the idea of either impeaching Scalia and Roberts for lying on their during their Senate confirmation hearings, or like my caller Christine said, impeaching Scalia for being in cahoots with Cheney. If that's not going to be an option, let's look at the option of adding more Supreme Court justices. There is a little bit of logic to this too. There are 13 federal district appeals courts. There's the, you know, you've heard the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, and so on. Well, there's 11 of those circuit courts of appeals, plus there's the District of Columbia, the D.C. Court of Appeals, and then there's the overall federal court of appeals. And the way that the Supreme Court works is each one of the justices rides herd on a few of these circuit courts. They're kind of like the, I don't know, the ceremonial leader of that court. They used to have a lot more involvement with the circuit courts, not so much anymore. It's more of a ceremonial thing. But also, these justices kind of review those circuit courts. And so the way things stand now is like John Roberts is in charge of two or three or four of those circuit courts. Well, let's just bump the number of justices up to 13. That way, we can have one Supreme Court justice for each of the circuit courts. I think that's a little bit more fair because the circuit courts represent all the geographical regions of our country. And if we have one judge in charge of each of those geographical regions, perhaps the judges will reflect better the standards of those geographical regions. And so maybe we can get more liberal justices. Now, of course, if we try this, the righties are going to scream. They're going to scream all about, you know, can't play fair and trying to rig the court system. But, you know, it's hard to say that with a straight face after you got 150 people from Regents University in the Bush administration, a fourth-tier Pat Robertson law school. You want to talk about rigging the courts? Come on. You know, there are so many of these lousy, subpar Bush appointees that it'd be hard to say that with a straight face. But even if they did, here's my response to that. Okay, you think it's unfair for our side to put up four justices. Tell you what, here's the way we'll do it. We'll do it like how my mom solved problems when I was a kid, right? When me and my brother was a kid, we're kids, if we had a candy bar and we were supposed to share the candy bar, mom would let one of us break the candy bar and the other one got to choose which half they wanted. And that would kind of motivate you to make the halves as equal as possible. So let's do that. Let's offer a bipartisan compromise to the Republicans after we take control in 2008. Let's say, all right, we're going to pass this rule to have four more Supreme Court justices, but you guys get to come up with the list of the potential candidates. Sure, let's let the minority party come up with a list of potential candidates for the Supreme Court, and then the majority party will help decide, you know, in the confirmation hearings, which ones make it. This way they can't accuse us of sending the most liberal type of justices to the court, but still we will temper their selections of conservative justices by forcing them to have to pick someone moderate enough to pass through the Democratic nomination process. So that's my theory. I say let's just go for it. It's time for some radical restructuring here in America. Not only should we increase the Supreme Court, we should also increase the House of Representatives. That's another number that's not set in stone. It's 435 right now. But there's no reason why we can't bump that up. And if we increased the membership in the House of the Representatives, the more populous states, California, New York, Illinois, would get more representation when it comes to picking presidents. And again, we could free ourselves from the shackles of this rightward tilt of our constitutional democracy. So those are my theories. I'd love to hear what you have to say about them. Give me a call, 866-5577-377.
This is the Russ Belleville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belleville.
47 after the hour. You know, in so many ways, the Supreme Court of the United States is the most important branch of government. There's, you know, they have so much effect on our day-to-day lives, and to not have filibustered against Alito, at least, that's a real disappointment for me from the Democrats. If there's another appointment, if Stevens, you know, God forbid, if Stevens retires or passes away, and Bush gets the chance to nominate another justice, Boy, I'm telling you, we've got to filibuster. We got to do everything to stop the next nomination, whatever it takes. Because here's another aspect where this Supreme Court is going to become hugely important in the next coming few months. You know that the Bush administration has been subpoenaed by Congress. Congress issued subpoenas regarding the whole U.S. attorney firing scandal because over and over they have asked for letters and documents and records, and the Bush administration has been stonewalling and stonewalling. Finally, it took us to give some subpoenas to try to get some information out of the Bush administration, and this is the answer that they got from the Bush administration.
I know nothing, nothing.
That's right, yeah. Sergeant Schultz from Hogan's Heroes. Hogan! Cheney! Anyway, yeah, they just said, no, we're not going to give them to you. Yeah, the Congress subpoenaed the White House, and they said, no, we're going to claim executive privilege. We have executive privilege on those communications. And this is the way the righties are going to spin it. They're going to say, well, the president needs to get unfettered advice. He needs to get honest advice from his advisors. And so if we allow congressional oversight into that advice, that will keep them from being honest with their advice. Well, all right. Doesn't that mean then if you're having a problem with the oversight, then the advice you're giving is something you don't want people to know about? And so what kind of things are there that you don't want the American people knowing about? You know, I always thought this was about an open government, a transparent government, you know. Last time we had a president like this, you know, yeah, that guy. Last time we had a president like this, you know, we saw the problems that happened. But no, the Bush administration just said, nope, we're not going to comply with subpoenas. Now, Patrick Leahy has, you know, come out strongly and said this is a president and vice president that feel that they're above the law. And this is the important point. This administration does not believe the laws apply to them. They believe that they are a unitary executive, that it's a time of war, and they can do anything they damn well please without any meddling from those meddling congressmen trying to get information. And this isn't the only thing that we're trying to get information on. Next, we've got that investigation into the warrantless wiretapping. You know, when they're spying on the American people, they've been covering that up too. And they're lawyering up, and they're saying executive privilege. What do you got to hide, Bush? What are you hiding? You know, that's what they always come back in. What do you have to hide? When they were going after Clinton, they always said if you had nothing to hide, you'd come right out and talk. You would claim executive privilege. So the shoe's on the other foot now, Bushies. Why can't you answer these subpoenas? Well, here's why. They're trying to run out the clock. They know Bush only has 569 days, 11 months, and 11 hours, 4 minutes left to go in his administration. They're just going to run out the clock. And they also know, worst case scenario, if they have to fight this in court, guess what court it ends up in? Yeah, it ends up in the Robert Scalia Alito Thomas Kennedy Supreme Court. It ends up in that Supreme Court that anointed Bush, that appointed Bush as our resident, despite the vote rigging in Florida and despite the fact he didn't get the popular vote. So, yeah, the Supreme Court, real important, Democrats. Pay attention to it. 51 after the hour, I'm Radical Russ. We're coming back after the break. We'll wrap things up for the day, and then me and you, we're all off to our 4th of July weekends. I hope you have a good one. We'll see you in a few.
And 620KPOJ.com.
Yeah.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star.
Oh, 55 after the hour. So much to talk about, so little time. Dang it, I need a 3-hour weekday show. If you're listening on your local station or streaming on 620KPOJ.com, hey, give a call or an email to your station managers. Tell them you want Radical Russ weekdays, man. I got so much to talk about. I wasn't able to get to it all, but I did notice that the most terrifying member of the right-wing universe has appeared again, raising her ugly head. Oh, yeah. this. It's the Coltergeist. The Coltergeist has returned. Yeah, did you catch her the other day? Oh, my God. She's on the show the other day talking about John Edwards. I don't know what she's got with John Edwards. She's always, you know, trying to bait him with some sort of talk. But this was her famous quote for the week.
So I've learned my lesson. If I'm going to say anything about John Edwards in the future, I'll just wish he had been killed in a terrorist assassination plot.
Yeah, see, that's the kind of discourse you're going to get from those compassionate conservatives. But to her credit, Elizabeth Edwards, the wife of the candidate, did call into the Hardball show live, and she dressed her down. Check this. This is beautiful. Got to listen to this one.
I'd like to ask Ann Coulter, too, if she wants to debate on issues, on positions. We certainly disagree with nearly everything she said on your show today. But it's quite another matter for these personal attacks. The things that she has said over the years, not just about John, but about other candidates, lowers our political dialogue precisely at the time that we need to raise it. So I want to use the opportunity, which I don't get much because Ann and I don't hang out with the same people.
yeah, I'll bet they don't.
To stop the personal attacks.
Excellent. I'm so glad Elizabeth Edwards was able to say that. It got such a great response from everyone. So maybe we're going to see the beginning of the end of the Coltergeist. And speaking of other blondes, we'd like to see the beginning of the end of.
You're watching CNN, the most trusted name in Paris news.
That's right. Paris Hilton, the person who violated probation twice and got caught drunk driving. Yeah, she got out of jail, and so she went on to Larry King Live for an hour. Michael Moore got bumped. He was going to promote his movie Sicko that came out yesterday, but he got bumped for Paris Hilton. And did you know last week that 1% of the coverage in the mainstream media, just 1% of that coverage was on Iraq policy during this whole Paris Hilton thing? Yeah, and it got so bad that Mika Brzezinski, who is the daughter of Zbigniew Brzezinski, Carter's from the Carter administration, his daughter, who works on MSNBC, she had a fit. She had a fit on the air and refused to try to read the Paris Hilton stories and actually tried to burn the script about Paris Hilton. So we're starting to see, it's starting to happen. People are getting disgusted. We want real talk. We want real conversation about the issues that affect America. No more Paris Hilton. No more Anna Nicole Smith. No more Lindsay Lohan. Let's talk about what's really affecting America. But I will give you one little more Paris Hilton thing, just because. This was her response about her drunk driving.
Well, this all started off with the DUI, which was a .08, and I will never drink and drive again. Granted, it was, you know, one drink.
It was one drink! Yeah, she blew a .08 on one drink. Well, you know, I used to do that too back in my college days. Of course, that's because I had this big, you know, 60-ounce beer stein that I used to call my one drink. So, yeah, the law works different for the rich and famous, don't it? Well, I'm Radical Russ Belville, your average guy, your political talk for the regular guy, working class survivor of Bush's America. We'll be back next weekend with more radical talk and more solutions for what ails this country. We'll see you next time.